Hello, and welcome to another episode of EQCast. I'm your host, Christy Pritchard. Thanks so much for joining us on this unconventional sideshow of healing and self-betterment. This is where you can find unscripted conversations with authentic humans sharing their trials and triumphs around their emotional wellness journey. We keep it light, but we can get dark, so fasten your seatbelts. Thanks so much for joining us. I want to welcome Audrey Pichet. She's a Victoria resident who works in commercial property management. She's of Cree lineage and has a very colorful past. We'll get into her ancestral roots, her generational trauma, and her path to recovery. Thank you so much for joining us, Audrey.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm super glad that you're here. We're just going to dive right in and get into your story, where you came from, and kind of get into your early traumatic experiences before we jump into your healing journey. And the people that assisted you along the way. How does that sound?
It sounds perfect. That sounds like a strong journey.
Definitely. The platform is yours, my dear.
So I was born in Alberta, Northern Alberta, Edmonton. It was quite a rough go to begin with. We definitely didn't have a lot of money. I remember a lot of Santa's Anonymous growing up, and a lot of food bank trips and riding on my grandpa's bike with him. My mom was quite young when she got pregnant with me. She was 16. And my grandmother took me in, and they were actually quite amazing for me. You know, we were happy. We just didn't have a lot. My mom was really, you know, not well. She had very bad drug and alcohol problems. And all my interactions at young that I remember with her, I just remember fearing her and just sort of hiding from her and such. Mm-hmm. Going on, you know, when I hit 12 years old, that's the age you're allowed to decide where you get to live. And my mom came down and, you know, asked if I wanted to live with her. And I had those two options, you know, a loving household, or my mom, who worked on, you know, getting a very good job and being, you know, a little bit more well off. And I thought that she just had all this money and she'd be able to take care of me now. And I moved in with her, and she packed me up and she took me down to Calgary, away from my whole family, from everyone. We had no one down there. My entire life just got, you know, dumped on its head, basically. I had to fend for myself. I had to be an adult at 12 years old. And it was so much worse living with her and having money than it was not having money and being in a loving household.
Happiness over cash, for sure.
100%. Yeah. There was a lot of, you know, abandonment, and, you know, she basically just wasn't home. And when she was home, she was just mad all the time because she worked really hard. And there was nothing I could do to live up to what she needed, because there really was nothing that could live up to anything and make her happy, because she was just an angry person. You know, she'd gone through a lot in her life. And my grandmother, when she was younger, raising her kids, she was really not nice either. You know, she just didn't do well to look after them. And, you know, maybe there was a little bit of anger towards me, jealousy towards me, because I got the good side of my older grandmother.
Obviously, like, your grandmother's anger passed down to your mom's anger, and mm-hmm. eventually that passed down to you.
Yeah, you know, it did. Coming out of high school, you know, I moved out a couple times when I was young, 14, 16, 18. I moved out for good, and I just put my head down and I worked. And I partied all night and worked all night and slept all day. And I was just mean to people. You know, I worked really hard, and I always got into management positions, and I just expected a lot out of everyone around me. And I just didn't understand why no one worked as hard as I did. And, you know, maybe I wasn't vicious or anything, but I definitely wasn't the nicest person to be around when I was working.
Fair enough. I mean, that's what happens when you get crap passed down to you.
Yeah, living with my mom, I definitely wasn't allowed to have any feelings. Even as a young child, I was just a crybaby. I definitely was. My great uncle gave me, you know, an Indigenous name, Baby Cry.
That's so cute. Because I always cried. I was always,
that's all I did as a little one. And they even, you know, when I got a little bit older, everyone in my family made fun of my crying and told me that I sounded like a pack of wolves because I would always go, ooh.
That sounds like Peanut.
Yeah, and I just, like, I couldn't control. I had so many emotions. And then, yeah, moving in with my mom was, like, not allowed. It was just completely cut off. And anytime I had emotions or, you know, I was crying, it would be, well, I'll give you something to cry about. And she definitely did. And there was no holding back on her end. It was very, you know, structured. And anytime I wanted to talk about anything, it made it so much worse, you know. I remember the second time I moved out at 16, you know, my mom was screaming at me and I said, hey, can we talk about this? There's obviously something wrong. Can we have a conversation about this?
Smart.
And that was the wrong thing to say.
That's such an emotionally intelligent thing to do as a 16-year-old. And unfortunately, since it wasn't received, so what happened?
So that's when I packed my bags and I moved out.
Good for you for having the strength to do that.
But, yeah.
Was she physically abusive as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It was really tough. And I know, like, It's a mother figure, and you think, like, that's a loving mother, you know, but it was definitely more of the physical aspect of it was very hard and very shocking to me because that had never happened to me when I was younger.
Oh, no kidding. With your grandparents?
I had never expected to even be struck by someone. And when it happened the first time, it was absolutely crazy.
Oh my goodness. It's traumatizing for sure. I guess that's where the PTSD comes in and probably the drug use after that would make a lot of sense.
You just got to bury it. You got to just do whatever you got to do to bury it and
numb
just
it out.
Through it, numb it out. We got to get work done. We got to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy how we do that. It's our defense mechanism.
But it always comes back.
It does.
Time or another.
For sure. That's good. Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I read a post of yours and you were talking about the tail end of generation who shunned their feelings and mistook sadness as weakness. I really love that phrase, by the way. That was beautiful. Do you mind getting into some more details around that? Maybe more about that generation and the lineage?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I realized that she was raised at a time where she had to fight for everything she had. And she worked really hard. She works in construction and she makes sure she's working just as hard as everyone around her. And it's not an easy, like back in that time, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, when she was getting into that industry, there was no welcoming mat for women at all. And and she always worked really hard and kept up with the guys, because she just felt like she needed to do that. You know, my grandmother was really hard on her and basically made her run the whole household. You know, my grandmother also was an alcoholic and she didn't let them, you know, be kids. And so I wasn't allowed to be a kid when I moved in with my mom. You know, I don't remember her ever taking me to the doctor for anything when there was anything wrong with me. I just had to work through it. You know, wow. I'm pretty sure like I almost broke my ankle at one point and she wouldn't take me in. I just got a bag of ice and that was it. And I had like laryngitis or I don't know what I had, but it was so bad. And I cried for like 2 days and she was nice to me. Well, I cried then because she knew I was sick, but she just didn't actually take care of me.
So what do you think the repercussions of that are for you as an adult now?
Was really angry and I was very mean and, you know, and I expected a lot out of the people around me and I definitely was very abrasive and, you know, I was put in management positions and I made people cry. You know, I remember one of my bosses taking me aside and being like, Audrey, like people aren't on that same level. Like you got to just relax. It made me really successful and I worked really hard and I always got taken care of in all the jobs that I had, but I just wasn't a nice person and I just didn't like it. You know, I always say that the coast, when I moved out to the coast, I realized that I could be a nice person and, you know, take care of other people. And I surrounded myself with really nice, open people. I got rid of the people around me that, you know, were negative and that, you know, I originally was drawn to. And I realized that I wanted kindness. And, you know, after I moved, I went through a really, really rough breakup and I had no diagnosis whatsoever, but I suffered horrendous panic attacks, crippling. I swear that I had a panic attack that lasted about 2 weeks and I was just on this brink of feeling like I was going to collapse at all times.
Wow.
It was very, very intense. I was just like, I was just barely breathing to get through for so long. And then, yeah, I started getting around the right people, you know?
Yeah, I was going to ask too, you said you encountered in that same post that some brilliant people who changed your life. I was wondering where you came across them and most importantly, what did they bring out in you?
Yeah, so a previous partner of mine, his family were probably the most amazing people I've ever met. And they were people that were actually very well off. And that was something that I'd not experienced in my lifetime whatsoever. And they really took care of themselves, but they were also, they just had these massive hearts. They were so amazing and they saw something and they encouraged me to sort of seek treatment and to better myself. They didn't just look at me and be like, there's something wrong with her. They just, the way that they went about it, they made me feel so accepted. And then they showed me that there were ways to help myself and that I didn't need to suffer.
Oh, lovely.
Basically. And I happened upon a doctor and she was new to the city and she said, you know, come to my clinic. I'm looking for new patients. And I went down and we had the initial, you know, consultation. And at the end of the appointment, she looked at me and she said, now, how are you? And I didn't know what to say. My entire body just sort of like went into panic mode and I just started bawling. And she looked at me and she said, okay, let's get you some help.
Awesome.
And, you know, after a nice conversation with her about, you know, some things going on in my personal life, she decided the best course of action was to get me into mental health and substance abuse counseling. And she got me into the BC Association for that. I had a one-on-one counselor because I had such crippling anxiety and she made me realize so many things. And I'm sure that's what can be said about most counselors. And I'm pretty sure that's standard, but I just had no idea this was an option. I was told it was never okay. I was never allowed to talk about things when there was something wrong, you know, just
opened up a whole new world.
Yeah. It flipped it upside down. And I was like, oh wait, this is how things go. What?
There are people that care and want me to share my feelings. Amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I absolutely love it. And so how long did you see your counselor for and what was the process throughout therapy? And did you do any other modalities like meditation or diet change or anything like that? I know you mentioned you're sober as well, if you want to talk about that for a bit.
Absolutely. So it was drug and alcohol and mental health. And, you know, the counseling, I did it for years with her. You know, I'd say it probably went on for 4 years solid. It was great. She really encouraged me to try and get more into the groups. I was never really able to do it until she offered basically a course on PTSD and trauma. And it was so eye-opening. And I got in this room with these, you know, 10 other people, 10, 12 other people. And we all sat there and, you know, we went through our things and we went through the course material. It wasn't just open sharing. It was very nice to have it structured. And I ended up getting a certificate from that as well.
Wow. Cool. Well, what's the certificate?
It was just training okay. on PTSD and trauma. Oh, wow. And just so that it can say that I know about it and that right. I'm educated on it and that, you know, it's not really, I don't think it's too applicable to anything. I think it was more of a mental boost.
Yeah, definitely. What a mental boost. We all need kind of reassurance that we're on the right path and taking the right steps. Yeah, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I also really loved how you admitted that emotional health is a constant practice too. It's so true. We don't just get better and life doesn't just get all of a sudden get easy. That's just not how it works. As long as you're just open to the fact that this is a constant constant ever-evolving process, and new hurts come in and we have to learn how to heal those. I was just wondering what you do day to day to keep up with your emotional wellness.
So I really do a lot of reflection. I pay attention to everything that's going on around me. You know, I feel, I pay attention to the actual physical feelings in my body. I pick up on signals, things that are happening, you know, if I start, you know, getting jittery, those kinds of things. I talk myself through it. Okay. And I also, you know, it's in that writing that I did as well, but I reach out to people a lot. If there's something going on and I can't organize my thoughts or anything like that, and I'm feeling panicked or anything, you know, I'll throw something out there to someone and just be like, I'm feeling overwhelmed that this is happening. And someone will reply like, I don't know how, but I have surrounded myself with, you know, counselors and therapists and wonderful people that know about, you know, physical well-being and, you know, natural, holistic, you know, everything. All the people around me just have some of those tools.
Awesome. Yeah, those tools are super important. Well, it sounds like you're just kicking ass and taking names. I absolutely love it. How long has it been since you were in Calgary to where you are now?
So it's been about 11, 12 years.
That's black and white. Kind of what you came into too in the party scene here to sober living.
Absolutely. You know, I was massive in the party scene in Calgary. I came out here. I quieted down a little bit. But then I was in the party scene again, got this counselor, tapered off a bit, had some sober time. I moved away for a little bit and I sort of went off the wagon and, you know, sort of got into everything again and was
that using. Damn wagon, I tell you. It's so hard to keep your clutches in it.
There's definitely no seatbelts, I tell you.
Oh my God. F no. No seatbelts. Not a single one. In fact, I'm pretty sure they have ejection buttons on there constantly. Yeah. I'm really stoked that you found a nice little settled home and new career path in Victoria. That's awesome. And sobriety of 6 months. That's super impressive. So was there anything else that you wanted to share about your process?
You know, like one of the big things for me this time around being sober is just the having confidence in it and letting the people around me know about it. It's not necessarily boundaries, but it's just being, you know, oh yeah, I'm sober. I'm sober.
Right.
And just owning it,
being
a part of it, you know, not being high and mighty at all, but being like, yeah, I'm not drinking, you know, it is just what it is. And that's who you are now. It's my, a bit of my identity now, which is really strange. It's only been 6 months.
It's easy to downplay, but
yeah,
6 months is a long freaking time, sister.
Yeah, it definitely is. But it's easy with my friends. Cause you know, I've surrounded myself with people that are supportive no matter what I choose. Awesome. And it's really about who's around you. Definitely. Yeah, who's around 100%, you.
100%. Very lovely. And so Victoria, I guess they have a pretty big sober community there.
I actually only have like one sober friend. My other friends all do drink.
Oh, and you're fine. Yeah. Going out.
That's and good. I'm just it's like, good. Hey guys, no, it's fine. I'll be the cool person that drives everyone. Yeah, totally. I don't
Everybody
care.
That.
In the car. I'm awesome. I got all the brownie points.
The party.
Yeah.
Definitely the most important person of the party.
Are you okay to drive? I've had two energy jinks. I'm good.
I'm flying off my ejection seat. I don't know if I can hang on. Awesome. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and all of your story. And that was just a big, huge jump from point A to point B for you. And I'm excited to see what happens next in your life.
100%.
Career, sobriety, come back on the show. Let's chat again.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you so much for joining us, Audrey.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Bye.